Hey, everybody, and welcome to another week of the Star Wars Book Club podcast. I am your host, Blake Schultz. Joining me, as always, is Harley Salabaca.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Siler Barry.
What's going on?
All right, gang. So this week we are finishing up our 3-week stint of the Han Solo young adult novel Smuggler's Run. We finished part 3 and our epilogue. And guys, what'd you think for this finale?
Guys, there's another canon Star Wars redhead.
Yeah.
That makes 2.
There you go.
I'm so excited.
There you go.
And she's a badass bartender. They said her hair color and I was like, wait. Like the redhead behind the counter and I was like, or behind the bar and I was like, what?
There you go. Now everybody has something. You have another redhead. Tyler has Santi. And we have so many evil droids.
And our prediction was right. I mean,
yeah.
Jumping to the very, very end, the epilogue, the old man was Han and the woman behind the bartender was Delia. So that was cool.
And it was her floating bar. Portable bar.
I like that those really turned out to be the seeds for the journey to the Force Awakens, which really wasn't the way I thought it was going to go when they started this thing. And it's interesting talking about it now that the movie is out and has been out. But when they first pitched it, I was kind of like, oh, there's going to be subtle things here and there. Maybe one of the droids or bounty hunters will be part of the Guavian enforcers or with the king guy that Han mentions. And it really sort of turned out that he was just telling the story to the people he's going to end up owing debts to who try to take the Falcon, which I thought was kind of cool. I also really thought that it was going to end up being the story of how he lost it. And that then had you read the book before it, when they're like, there's the Falcon, we'd be like, oh, because it's gone. Or something in that vein. But I think it was more just the implication that it's going to be missing by the time the movie rolls around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because now he has a lot of people on his ass.
Yeah. I was a little bummed out that there wasn't a big resolution with Beck. I kind of liked her leaving and just,
I feel like it's coming.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by that at all, considering it was, a short book. You can't cram that much into a YA novel like that. And the very last line Han says to Curtis in the epilogue, he's just like, because Curtis is like, so what happened with Beck? And he's like, I'll tell you next time. I'm like, well, yeah, clearly, obviously there's going to be a next time. So I wasn't surprised by that at all or really that disappointed. Because I think the payoff of and you know what I was actually thinking? One description I read of all these YA novels was this'll strengthen, because they came out before Force Awakens, and they're these will strengthen everything, some things you see in Force Awakens. I actually think that it's better to read at least this one after you see the Force Awakens, because of the impact, because of where the Falcon is when you see the movie, and getting sort of an explanation about how that's going to end up happening by reading this book. It almost seems like you should watch the movie first and then read the Han Solo novel.
Right.
I agree. I totally agree. Because if I had read this before, I would have been like, okay, tell those people you're not scared of them. Okay. And then when the movie happened, I probably would have forgotten that was the names.
Yep.
But because that was such a distinct part of him being Han Solo in the movie, I was like, I get it.
No, totally.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, that it really... Because the whole thing is, we had also read Shattered Empire, which apparently I need to go back and look at, because Beck is apparently either mentioned or in that miniseries.
Yeah, you said that, and I have to
There's
go
no
back
way
and
she's
reread it.
In it.
No.
Yeah,
she's got to only be... we read the whole thing. We would remember if she was in it.
So she's
so
probably...
she's got to be just mentioned or something.
Yeah. Which I thought was interesting, that there is sort of a through line with all the characters, and considering that it was journey to this new movie, a part of me was like, oh... That's a lot of mentioning that character and having her either not be mentioned or anything. There was even a part of me where I was like, did I miss something in The Force Awakens where at some point they're like, the First Order was started by this person? And I was maybe that'll be something else that they can even explore in the expanded universe, because her character is so the Empire is right and doing the right thing, and we're going to bring order to all of these places, that once it kind of breaks up, and considering she has this colossal failure on top of her, and she's also been carrying this men move up faster and like women aren't really in the Imperial office and I have this eye and blah, blah, all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
That maybe she would be one of the like splinter cell divisions that starts this new order.
Yeah.
Or somebody who Snoke finds and she's attracted to that. And I was like, there's a lot of things you could do with that character.
I hope they do. I hope they use her because I think she's a really interesting character.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah.
And I did, I liked the way they wrapped up their space fight of the Falcon just forcing the Star Destroyer to like make the choice of catching them and destroying a planet and making the, having like propaganda of the Empire not being nice. Which a part of me was like, this is the company that just blew up Alderaan to be like, neat. I don't. I think there's definitely people in the ranks that had she been like, to catch Emmett and the Falcon, I had to burn down this city and now all of these people hate us, that the Emperor would have been like, but you got the Falcon, right?
Yeah, because
now we'll just tell them, this is what happens if you don't submit. We'll just tell the rebels, we will destroy people and murder millions of people to keep you from getting this from our goals.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely... That's so the Empire.
But I also did just... I just like the imagery of her turning around and walking away after she had made the choice of, like, I don't care about the TIE fighter pilots, pulling the tractor beam. And even her other general was like, those are our people.
Yeah, I love that part where he's like, those are our pilots. And she's just like, don't care.
You keep telling me things I know.
And then they were lost for nothing because she couldn't even get it done.
I know. Yeah. She is almost to, like, Grand Moff Tarkin what Kylo Ren is to Vader. Like, I almost felt like she was just trying to be the, like, imposing dark will of just, like, we're going
to
get it done.
She has to try to prove herself.
Yeah. But she can't quite finish it.
Yeah.
Where, like, Tarkin got the information from Leia, blew up the planet. We know in the novel that he really is just like, I'm going to get this done. Too bad. Where Beck's like, I need to get it done.
I loved also the internal monologue for Han when he was talking about Emmett, like right when they get caught. And like Emmett's like, you can't stop us. Like, I'm not going to give you the answers you want. Like, there's no defeating like the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And Han's internal monologue was great where he was like, he's like, wow. And he was just like, I, you know, this is someone that either I have to be right behind or completely avoid. Well, it's too late to avoid him. But he talked about how he had like, I have such a respect for someone like that. And I think that was showing a lot of changing in his character development since they were like talking about, oh yeah, we got Han Solo and he's, you know, imitated an Imperial officer and a smuggler and all this stuff. And like, he's a bad seed, and having him be like, wow, this has been my life. But like, I get what this guy is saying. And like, I'm behind it.
Well, I definitely think that's something that the book does really well for Han's character, is that you take him at a point where he is kind of ready to go. Like, it's right after he makes the choice to come back and save the rebels at the Death Star. But you sort of see that he, in his entire life, has never had this thing that he's willing to die for, fight for, run for. That he's always just been going from, like, place to place, job to job, money to money, who am I going to rip off? And you even sort of see that come back to bite him in The Force Awakens,
mm-hmm.
in the scene where he does owe the Guavians and the other gang, whose name is constantly evading me, Korvac or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
You see them being like, you're out of people to swindle. Like, it's mm-hmm. the end of that rope, and which works also for where The Force Awakens ends with Han Solo.
Yeah.
But I think this was a really good stepping stone of his character, and even kind of motivates his choices in Empire, that you see that he starts to be like, I'm taking the princess on the Falcon. We have to get out of here. Like, he has so many chances on Hoth to bail.
Yeah.
But you start to see him, I'm going to go find Luke despite the fact that it's freezing. I'm going to get Leia out mm-hmm. of here despite the fact. I'm going to take us to Cloud City. And then even in Jedi, I'm going to lead the shuttle Tyderian. I'm going to take down the deflector shields. Even in the comic book, we've been seeing him be like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Like, you almost start to see Emmett is almost like his Obi-Wan of, like, here's the path you could be on.
Yeah.
And Han starts to be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's
can't avoid it any longer.
Yeah, it's a bigger start to his journey the way A New Hope was for Luke, where you really start to see him be like, we should have this thing that's important.
Yeah, I love all the character development for Han in this book. It's great.
and all the Chewie development. I just like that Chewie, the majority of the book, is like snickering.
Yeah, I love how they like had their fake fight to like get out of it. That was amazing. As soon as they started fighting, I was like, oh, this is a fake fight.
Which for some reason also sort of reminded me of The Force Awakens. It's a like small breadcrumb, but he like has that moment where he's like, I didn't hit you that hard. Okay, we all know you're big and strong and tough. And there's that moment in Force Awakens after he gets shot when he growls and the nurse is like, yes, that does sound scary. I know, you must be very brave.
I love that part.
And that reminded me of that when Han's like, I didn't hit you that hard. Yeah, we know that you're like, we get it.
And how at the end he just like, Chewie just steps out of the shadows when they're like, oh, it's three against the two of you. And like, if you hit, like if you shoot, you might hit him. And she's like, yeah, he hasn't pulled, like he hasn't paid his tab. And he's like, well, you know, Wookiees, sometimes, what he says something like this.
People remember that they're strong. Yeah. People remember that they'll like rip your arm off. People even might remember that they're from Kashyyyk, which was interesting.
Yeah.
He's like, but what people don't remember is that they're quiet.
Yep.
When they need to be. And then he just steps
out of the shadows and you're like, fucking Chewbacca.
Well, he doesn't even step out of the shadows. He was literally standing behind the guy for like 15 seconds, I think it says.
Yeah, it was like he's been there for, you know, yeah.
Quite like the decent amount of time for you not to realize an 8-foot Wookiee, an 8-foot bear is standing behind you.
Oh, God.
Well, they didn't seem like they were that intelligent anyway, but I attribute a lot of that to his, you know, Wookiee skills.
But I thought that was such a weird thing. Like, it made me really curious about Kashyyyk, because we had mentioned in the book right away, they go into slave trade.
Yeah.
And when Wahan is like, people might remember they're from Kashyyyk, I was like, well, what happens? Do they just take all the Wookiees away? Are all the Wookiees now spread out because they were slaves? Or did, like, what happened to Kashyyyk? I need to know.
Because I love Kashyyyk. Whenever we've gotten to see Kashyyyk, I'm like, ah, let's go there.
It's such a fun
place.
Let's
have a whole book there.
I'm sure somebody at some point will give you all the Kashyyyk you need. Like an ongoing series where they just growl at each other. The whole book just growls.
I don't know.
It would be terrible.
I would like a novel about Kashyyyk.
We might see it in the Han Solo movie.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that the other day, because what else do I think about? And you know how like there's all the, like, we know that Michael B. Jordan has been cast in a Star Wars movie, but we don't know which one. And now we know that Han Solo has been cast, but we don't know who it is. What if he's playing young Lando?
Oh, that seems like it makes sense.
Everyone's been like, oh, he's playing young Boba Fett. No, he can't. Like, da-da-da-da. What if he's playing young Lando?
I'd be completely okay with that.
That would make me so
happy. He's got the suave factor.
He does.
And, like, it would be great because, I mean, we know that they've known each other for a long time. It would be lovely to see how they meet.
Yeah. I just want to see him get the Falcon.
Yeah.
I want to watch him lose the Falcon.
What if that is in this movie? Maybe that's the whole point of them doing this. Like, yeah, you get to see young Han Solo. You get to see him meet Lando. You get to see him lose the Falcon to Han and how Han gets the Falcon. And then the end is him flying off in the Falcon with Chewie.
Right.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
So I think that was my thought the other day.
How has no one thought of that yet?
I'm sure people have.
It's because the internet's too concerned about talking about how they don't think he should play Boba Fett because he's black.
Speaking of Boba Fett and the bounty hunters, though, I was kind of bummed out that we didn't really see where the Captivator and his gang kind of end up. Like, they were still alive and kicking, and I was sort of waiting when they were fighting the Star Destroyer for them to show up too and have that almost be the reinforcements of that, of like, if even Han cut a deal and was like, take out the Star Destroyer and I'll go. And then he just gets away from them. If that was going to be his like scheme, because there was that moment where he's like, I sort of have a plan. And I was like, oh, I bet the bounty hunters are going to roll in, fight off the Star Destroyer. Solo gets away, gives them like fake coordinates, and then he makes everybody mad. But instead we got that awesome, the choice for the Empire. But I was like, oh, those guys are still out there somewhere.
Somewhere out there.
Yes. No, but I thought it was a satisfactory ending.
I liked it a lot.
I was a little bummed that it just kind of was like, and then the Falcon took off and was safe. And I was like, oh, we don't even get to see like him talk with Leia again or like bringing Emmett back.
Again, it's just, there'll be more of that. I have faith.
There will. I think I just wanted, it was such a good little book that I was like, I want more. I want more of the little book.
I mean, okay, Little Mermaid. What did you really want to see though? I just feel like if you add too many more things and it just like drags on for a while. Keep in mind this isn't
too convoluted.
It's a YA novel. Like you only keep people's attention for so long.
That's true.
Like if you just have an obligatory chapter that's just like them flying home, them bringing Emmett back to the rebellion, Princess Leia and Han having another interaction. It's just like it's not really that necessary.
Plus, I'm sure that in the Leia book, we'll get a Han and Leia interaction.
Yeah, probably. Absolutely.
I think if I could have had anything else, it would have been like one more small chapter of just like Beck going back with the failure and just seeing the consequences of that. If you're going to motivate her for something else, like I wouldn't have minded one more.
But see,
I would think you'd make that the setup for her own book.
Or like bring that in the next time you see her. Her having been beaten down because she failed, and so you now see her in the future feeling defeated.
Yeah,
and also it that wouldn't have really made that much sense considering Han's telling the story.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
I think it was great.
I did also like that they were like, "That's it, that's the story," and he was like, "Yeah, well, there's the Battle of Hoth and Endor, guys. This was early on."
Yeah,
like, and they're like, "I haven't even heard of Syrotech and all of these people," and I was like, "Well." That was actually kind of interesting that they were like, I don't even know what this planet is. And I was like, oh, I wonder, that's curious that there's a bunch of
people.
Maybe
it got blew up.
Maybe. Or it's like the Jedi. Everything kind of becomes a myth from that era. Either landed. Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to bring up. This is the very, very first time in any Star Wars thing that they've talked about the media. Like there's that moment where Beck is like, even if we destroy the planet, even with the Emperor having control of all of the media, there would still be, like, word of mouth. And I was like, that's the first time that we've ever heard of somebody, like, either news or stories
Which
or propaganda.
Is interesting, because, like, I assume propaganda, but I want to see how they use media in this universe, because obviously they don't use it a lot and they don't use it very well because things become myths decently quickly because it's mostly word of mouth. So I'm wondering if it's specifically like in the Empire that they have media and not really outside of like the core people in the Empire.
That would make sense. And it would also be a good way, I think, for the Empire to quote unquote maintain or like seize control of something. If they could go to like an outer rim planet that doesn't have media and then be like, news and history. Alderaan never got blown up.
Yeah.
Or the Death Star didn't. Everything's fine.
Because people are wondering how, like, how is it that, like, in, like, only 30 years things can become a myth? And I was like, because there's no internet or media, no one saw pictures of it.
Well, 30 years is also a long time. Like, how well do we really know 1980? Like, we've seen movies and read books, but, like, we weren't
there. And the
thing is
that, what if you didn't have those things?
Right.
And that's what I always think about. That's why myths happen faster in this universe is because they don't have proof of anything.
Yeah.
They only have stories.
Sure, but the counterpoint to that is history. Like, ever since we've had written language, we've been able to, like, be able to study things that happened hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Yeah. 30 years isn't that long of a time.
Yeah, but for them, I mean, I don't know how that structure is. That's something that I've been interested in. Like, I assume they have books and stuff recording everything, but, like,
I just assume it's all audio logs.
Probably. Yeah.
Who has access to that stuff?
The Empire.
Yeah. That's the other thing.
High-ranking members of the Empire.
So who else would have access? Like, you can't just be like,
history
I'm going to go
told
to the
by
library.
The winners, right? Like, that's always the thing is... Mm-hmm. So I imagine that they were able to squash all the Jedi temples and then go, the Jedis were all betrayed the Republic. We destroyed them. They're gone.
Yeah.
And then 30 years later, they just never talked about Jedis because Palpatine was like, shh, the Force. I don't have it. Vader's all that's left.
Yep.
And then it became religion, which becomes myth, which becomes hearsay.
Yeah.
But you do wonder why more people outside the Empire don't utilize R2 droids the way Leia utilized it in A New Hope. Like,
right.
Why aren't you recording at least yourself talking about your personal history or something like that?
Yeah.
Unless, again, they're only accessible to the Empire and the Rebels just have a handful. And then they're more focused on fighting than...
Seems like they have a lot, though.
They do. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. That's like the one thing in the Star Wars universe that they've always kind of just been like, shh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was the other reason that even when like Force Awakens rolled around and they were like, I thought Luke was a myth, a part of me was like, oh, let's just have it. We did the myth thing already. We did the all of them are gone. Like, he tried to make a new temple and a new order, and Snoke and Kylo Ren ruined it. Can't we just be at the point where maybe even you're like, it's dangerous to be a Jedi or a Sith? Like, why not go like that route where someone's like, no matter what, they die?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's like, clearly the entire time between Jedi and Force Awakens, it's not, Luke wasn't always like off the grid. Like, he was trying to do something that really was like a big thing.
Yeah,
like,
but
why is he all of a sudden a myth?
But like, I feel like he probably didn't make a big deal.
I'm sure
about
he didn't make a
big
deal about it, but people
he probably
talk.
Did it
well,
in like an isolated in, place.
Right.
And my other thing is they formed a New Republic, and I know that a lot of people have made the argument of like, there's three people when Vader turns, two of them are dead. They could say whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so you're telling me that Luke, Leia, and Han start a New Republic, a new democracy, out of the shards of the Empire, and inside of that, Luke's going to start a new Jedi Order and teach people the ways of the Force. Obviously, when he's talking about the Force, he's going to be like the dark side, temptation, fearless anger, blah, 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 blah. You're telling me that when he's telling that story, he's never going to go, the biggest bad guy who genocided the Jedi, helped the Emperor, helped the Empire, spread fear and terror throughout the galaxy, blew up planets, died a Jedi. You're telling me that he's not going to take the worst person in the history of this war, and when he's teaching about the Force, isn't going to be like, there's always redemption and you can always come back. The light side is stronger because there's redemption.
He could have taught that, though, because he could have taught that. For all we know, that's what Kylo Ren is talking about when he says, I'm going to finish what you started, grandfather. We don't know what he's actually talking about. And also, he killed. There's no other Jedi. Luke could have taught that to the, like, 20 Jedis that he was teaching, and then they all died.
Yeah.
They all died. So, and also, if he was doing this all on this isolated planet, like, I mean, say, like, your brother works with, you know, Leia Organa, and he's like, oh, yeah, heard Luke's gonna have his own Jedi Order, and they're like, psh, yeah, right.
I just imagine they did it the way the old school one was on Coruscant, where they had the Republic and the Jedi Temple there.
Yeah, but it's isolated. They're not gonna just be like, hey, anybody can come visit this Jedi Temple while we're training Jedis.
It's a new government. You'd think they'd want to spread that.
It's not... They're not going to be like, come to the Jedi Temple, like Disneyland.
They had 30 years. But they're going to talk about it.
So Smuggler's Run is really good.
It was
I recommend reading it. Obviously, if you're listening to the podcast, I'm sure you've already seen Force Awakens. So it definitely read it now that you've seen the movie. Because like I said before, I think it resonates a whole lot better. Especially the ending resonates a whole lot better if you've already seen the movie.
And then next we can do the Leia book.
Yep.
Yeah. So that'll be in our next episode. But in our next segment, we'll be talking about the return of the Darth Vader comic after Vader Down. So we will be right back, guys, with some of that. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Star Wars Book Club podcast. This is our second segment of our new episode, and we will be getting back into the Darth Vader comic, issue number 16. So it's also marks the, it's been a year now since the Darth Vader comic started, which is so wonderful.
I love it.
It's still the best one that they have.
I love it.
But it felt like it's been so long since Vader Down. That was such a long month because we went like week to week having something, and then they were just like, see ya. It was also crazy to me, this wait, because I think now that Force Awakens is out and everything's been around, the Star Wars comics have kind of slowed down a bit, not necessarily in their release, like they're still monthly and whatnot, but like we had like Shattered Empire, Leia, Lando, Vader, Star Wars, Kanan, and Chewbacca. So we had seven things going on for a while, and now it's just like Vader, Star Wars, Kanan, and Anakin and Obi-Wan. All of them are monthly. And you're like, oh... Oh, right.
And Obi-Wan and Anakin's miniseries.
Yeah, so that'll be over soonish. But, guys, what did we think about the new Vader book and where it took off?
I liked it. I liked that it brought it back around to the annual with him, where he went to the other planet and he made the woman, the queen, and then now you see him using her. That was great.
That was such a really fun dynamic, too, because they have that great moment where she's like, don't talk back to me. And he's like, you're the one who shouldn't talk back to me. And she's like, you made me queen. And he was like, yes, but even queens have to answer to me. And then I love that moment where she's like, okay, so it's a deal. We won't, like, talk back at each other in front of people. And then when we're in this little private room, I'll listen to you. And he's like, it's not a deal. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I was
but
like,
I like how she had the balls to be like, she, because he left her, like he left and then she followed him and she's like, we weren't done. And I was like, damn.
Women brave. Really seem to not mind like talking back to Vader. Like yeah. They're much less afraid of him than everybody else is.
Well, yeah.
It's his Achilles heel. he keeps messing up. But yeah, I thought that was, it was also an interesting one because it just kind of starts what's very clearly a new story. And I kind of liked that the end cap for the old story, the start of this one was him just dumping the Kel.
Oh my God.
The squid guy.
Carbon.
Carbon, thank uh-huh. you. I almost said Calbin for some reason. But when Carbon.
He drops his, like, dead carcass.
Are these lightsaber wounds, Vader? Maybe. I loved how coy he was with Palpatine. He was just like, give me a challenge that works. Maybe I killed him. Maybe he just sucks. He is, after all, a robot with a fish head.
You know, for my complaint about this issue is, like you said, Blake, it clearly does start a new story, a new book, if you will. I don't, for, so technically you can sort of call it like an issue one for this story. I don't really feel like anything happened. It was
there's a lot of build.
It was very, there was no, there was just no big story beat with the exception of bringing it back to the annual.
Yeah.
That was really sort of it. Like, you don't really get a sense of really what's going to happen in this new book through this first issue.
Yeah.
It's weird because usually issue one is like, or like the beginning of a new book is usually like really action-packed and really like, moves the story forward, and it's usually longer. This was pretty short.
Yeah, it felt very quick, and I do agree that it was, in all honesty, probably the most forgettable issue. Like, I even today had to kind of be like, go back to my notes before we started recording and be like, hold on. And usually with the Vader ones, I can be like, guys, all of these huge moments happened. Like, they spent so much time in the first storyline up to Vader down, building so much characterization and even kind of going back to the past and motivating and what he is. And then Vader Down was kind of the like climax of that and a really big action story. And this one felt very much just kind of like Vader on a mission where even like the annual for it at least had like really strong character moments. And it was a really good like one-shot story and really showed him like with the Alderaan rock and everything else. Where this one kind of meandered and almost tried to add, like it tried to start off this war. It tried to establish Carbon's death and kind of motivating that through line. Because obviously the other people that are left are...
With the weird twins.
The twinsies are probably going to go down next, I imagine. And then that'll be it. Like I imagine they die and then we're on our way to Hoth. And then the big kicker is...
Afra
is all the bounty hunters are coming, and really the best moment from that is when he's just like, dead or alive, I don't care.
Yeah, that was the only big climax moment, I think, was the very end. But a lot of it, I think, it was like a lot of setup. So I can guess at what they're going to do, but it was a lot of setup.
I think also...
And Santi Page.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Santi was it. Yeah, he was there with all the bounty hunters, with Dengar and everyone
looking
else.
Looking evil.
The other thing, too, that I think the Vader book had when it started, and... Harley, you'll probably know this better than I will, but it was like sometimes the Star Wars and the Vader comic came out on the same day, right?
Yes. So that happened not a lot of times. I think it happened twice.
Yeah.
And one of the times was doing Vader Down. They put out the Star Wars the last two issues of Vader Down at the same time, like on the same day.
I think because those books work so well in tandem that having to wait even another week for Star Wars 16... I imagine that'll almost be the other side of this story and that then we'll kind of have it. Cause they're always very like, even like the him hunting down Luke things intertwine. Yeah. I think it really helped both of them to kick off with such a close release schedule.
Yeah.
Because you got to play more, where now you're seeing just sort of this, like, building blocks. And then I bet the other issue will be, like, Aphra doing stuff and Luke and everybody else. Mm-hmm. And then when they get the chance to cross again, hopefully the payoff is stronger.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, when you're building that story, it's almost what, like, Bendis or, like, Hickman did when they were both doing the Avengers and the New Avengers, where you really had to be kind of looking at both of those to get the full thing. And there were definitely issues, even like the X-Men and all new X-Men books, where you'd get like 60% of a story and be like, okay, I guess that issue was all right. And then if you read the other one, you were like, oh, okay. Which is both a strength and a weakness, I think. And I think this week showcased how it can be weaker, especially coming off of the big event. Like, you almost have to kind of come back down.
Well, you have to come back down after a big event. You can't keep it up.
Yeah.
Like, I'll build. Like,
yeah.
Can't just be up in the sky the whole time.
I know.
Like, we have to have ups and downs. But even though it established a lot of things that I'm assuming are going to happen, it was still really well written. No matter what, they're really well written.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just,
in general. I mean, like, because we're saying, whenever we say negative things, I liked being like, no, this is well written, unlike Chewbacca. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing too, I think, is that the Vader book was like batting 1,000. And this one is like probably a solid like 8 out of 10. But when you're getting like tens and tens and tens, and then you're like, oh, okay. Like, you're just sort of like, neat.
Yeah, that probably was the first time that I was really like, I got to the last page and I was like, oh.
Cool.
I guess then I'll go do other stuff now instead of think about it for a while, because I just was like, okay, it's fine.
I had the exact same reaction. Like, I definitely was, it was one of those things where I was like, and the next, that's just the back cover of the comic book.
Yep.
There's not another, okay, neat. Yeah. And not to say that it's bad. Like,
it's
that,
not.
That happens with a lot of things. It's just, you know, a point. Yeah, and it was definitely another one to... I was really happy when Triple Zero and BT showed up.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they're still palling around.
You. I was like, Blake's happy on this page.
Of course. They always steal the show. I'm so happy that they're around.
They always have the best dialogue, man.
Yeah, they do.
They're always just like, we could. Even if it is just like, we could kill them. But I like this one that BT, like, oh, what did he say? He was like, I very often can be diplomatic, but sometimes I'm also violent. Okay, BT, I'm mostly violent, but in a diplomatic fashion.
I feel like he's like, if Blake was a robot, he'd be him, right? he'd be Triple Zero.
Well, yeah. He's just so silly. But yeah, it was definitely... It's also the first time, too, that we've seen it announce, like, the war in the very beginning.
Yeah,
that was interesting, yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if this is going to be... Again, if that's going to be in the Star Wars book 2, or if we're going to get to Star Wars next week and they're just going to be like, we're finding Hoth, or whatever, like, happens.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we're already building to the next big crossover event.
No, we're all just waiting for Poe Dameron.
That is true.
I'm waiting for Poe Dameron in the C-3PO one-shot.
Oh my god.
Which is never coming out, I assume.
Journey
to episode 8.
Oh god.
Though episode 8, guys, is now in production.
It started filming yesterday. Yeah. Or today, rather. How very cool and exciting. And I liked, and we'll talk about this a little bit, and then we'll probably get out of here, but I like the idea that it's just kicking off. They're almost making it seem like the first scene is just going to be Rey and Luke on that island.
I think it possibly is.
Which I think is cool. That it's going to just be like, and we're back. Let's go.
I bet it's not.
No.
I bet it's not even remotely that.
I
was like, they're going to show the first still and it's going to be... I was like, no, that's way too convenient. That's not going to be... No.
Also, because they only... I know that they have a... Like, that island that they film that part at, they can only film on that island for, like, a month.
Oh.
Like, twice a year. Mm-hmm. There's only 2 months out of the year that they... That's which one of the reasons they pushed production for episode 8.
So they probably just go there, knock out everything
have to do there, and then they're like, cool. Because that's I know that that's one of the reasons they had to literally schedule their filming around when they could film that scene for episode 7 there.
Wow.
So, because they only let people go film there like twice a month out of the year.
That's so cool.
And they also only let people on it. Like, apparently, like, I was reading about it, like, a limited amount.
Is it like a, is it just because the island has a lot of like natural stuff, or is it like historic in any way?
It's historic. Like all the, stairs and stuff you see, like it used to be like a little like civilization.
Oh,
there's like houses and stuff still in artifacts. Like that's
where correct me if I'm wrong. It's near Ireland.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's off of Ireland. And so it's like legitimately still has like all those like houses and the steps and like little like remnants of civilization, and they don't want it disturbed. Mm-hmm. So they only let people on it a limited amount of time. Now everyone's gonna try to go in there because they film Star Wars there.
Right.
And then you can only film there like 2 months out of the year.
Yeah. So that, and let's be honest, you've shot things from a script before. You don't start with the first moment of the script usually.
All right, guys. Page one.
It's like probably not. Probably not.
Some sequels have.
I'm sure they have, but...
I'm sure...
They picked up, but you don't shoot in order. Like, you don't go, like, scene one, page one. No. You'll go, you know, you'll make a schedule. So if you have to say, shoot on an island for a day or two. No, I think that's really cool, though. Because I remember...
Excited.
Yeah, I think everyone's excited. Like, that's going to be just... They're doing such a good job of just keeping these movies at, like, the forefront of your brain. Like, it's crazy how they're like, we know it's 2 years away, but think about it a little bit. And then Rogue One is coming. Just keep thinking about Star Wars. It's here forever. You will die not knowing the end.
No.
No, I'm pretty sure that that's going to be
wildly
incorrect. But is there anything else you guys want to talk about on the Vader comic or anything else?
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, then I think that'll wrap up our episode for today. As always, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thestarwarsbookclubpodcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a nice review. Those are super, super nice. You can follow us on Twitter at SW Book Club or just search Star Wars Book Club Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Modern Nostalgia Productions, which brings you to our other two podcasts, Modern Nostalgia Gaming and Hollywood Already Did It. You can follow me personally at QuakeBorder55. You can follow Harley at
Miss Harley R on everything that is social media.
And you can find Tyler at...
I'm at the Tie Game.
All right, team, and we will be back next week. So we will see you later.
Peace.
Later.